From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
The president's in trouble if he falsely spread this kind of misinformation. That is so wrong. It's beneath the dignity of the presidency.
That was the Senate Minority Leader, New York Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer, speaking about recent claims by President Trump that he may have been wiretapped by the Obama administration.
On the other hand, if it's true, it's even worse for the president, because that means that a federal judge, independently elected, has found probable cause that the president or people on his staff have had probable cause to have broken the law or to have interacted with a foreign agent. Now, that's serious stuff. So either way, the president makes it worse with these tweets.
While the mainstream media spent the weekend attacking the allegations as being not credible, there are some who are looking at why this might have happened if it did in fact happen. For more on that, we spoke with analyst Mark Sloboda. He's an American living in Moscow. He's a senior lecturer on international affairs at Moscow State University and a retired U.S. Navy officer. You know, this is, if true, we're going to find out the details and perhaps even see the FISA requests declassified, which would be a first, but apparently
maybe
the authority of the president. There was some deep state games going on to try to keep Trump out of office. And, you know, it's not usually that they're afraid of a billionaire or a bigot. You'd have to assume that the, you know, resistance has to do with policy. And there was and has been a different foreign policy, at least enunciated. And we're seeing some changes, you know, not major changes yet, but he still doesn't have his people in place. But some changes in foreign policy. You want to play with that a little bit?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was a really exciting week for the DC-driven news cycle. You started off with Trump riding a high, coming off of speeches in Congress, and then a very I'm the war president, mission accomplished, even though I haven't even started yet, on the Gerald Ford aircraft carrier about to be launched, both of which Trump used to broadcast his increased military budget proposals to Congress, where he's proposing what actually amounts to a $20 billion increase in the federal military budget, not the 54 that's widely reported, because that's based on early sequestration levels. But they were riding high. Even the liberal media conceded that Trump actually appeared presidential in the speech to Congress, at least, although why they thought that, I'm not quite sure. I didn't think so. But they were riding a high, and then the Sessions reports came forward. The allegations that Jeff Sessions, Trump's attorney general, already approved, lied, or more to put it more accurately, maybe was not as forthcoming as they would have liked when discussing his connections with Russia and two meetings that he had on the record. As a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee with the Russian ambassador to the U.S., Kislyak, Sergei Kislyak. So, that was really driving the news cycle towards the end of the week. And then there's this explosive moment, I believe it's just yesterday already, just a day ago from recording, that Trump tweeted out in a Twitter storm, a ranting storm, that he believed, or he's alleging that he was wiretapped, that in the Trump Towers, although the details of that may not be what it quite sounds like, by the Obama administration during the campaign. And this is even if it was legal, technically legal, if Obama did finally get a legal FISA warrant to have this done, that it is the sitting president of the Democratic Party wiretapping the Republican, the candidate of the Republican Party during the election. Even if he believes he had good reason to do that, even if a FISA court approved it, it is still really politically explosive.
Especially and given that he endorsed Hillary Clinton, he was campaigning for.
Especially, of course, right? And was so very negative towards Trump, you know, as so many were. But to be clear, as Obama's legalistic then response to this was, he said that the president, Obama, did not order a surveillance of Donald Trump or of any U.S. citizen, which technically would be true because the president doesn't order it. However, what it doesn't say is whether there were actual wiretaps and if someone appointed by the Obama administration, such as his attorney general and FBI, ordered it, which, of course, they would have. So it's really a legalistic response. And at the end, it would just be shifting blame away from Obama himself to his appointees to those offices, and the suggestion that this would have been done without running it by his desk, he certainly would have had to approve it in the end, is just a little ludicrous. It's really parsing hairs there.
You know, listen, I mean, let's be completely accurate from the legalistic point of view. If President Obama were in a room with, say, Comey and Loretta Lynch and said, I wish I could be a fly on the wall at Trump Tower, the procedure would be Loretta Lynch petitioning the FISA court after a request from Comey, or perhaps, you know, sui sponte, and the FISA court doing the ordering of it. So that, you know, but then the response from the Obama administration that you just referenced, of course, would be completely accurate. It would be truthful under oath, so it wouldn't be perjury. And yet, it does not tell the story.
Completely disingenuous.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. But we don't know if this is true yet. We don't have proof of this, and we won't unless Trump declassifies this FISA request. Supposedly, if they did do this, they didn't find anything explosive. Or if they did, they didn't release it prior to the election and haven't released it yet. And they might still be conducting an investigation into it, although that seems unlikely. Or the third possibility is that Trump is completely unhinged and none of this happened and he just tweeted it out and it would probably mean the end of his presidency simply over a complete lack of credibility and questions about his sanity.
Yeah, I don't know about the end of his presidency, but
I don't think that's very likely.
Yeah, nor do I.
I think, Trump is eccentric and he's controversial, and I'm not going to say he's the most academic or scholarly president in the world. I don't think anyone would say that, but I don't think he is insane, and I don't think the man is technically stupid. What it certainly did is change the news cycle around. It went away from the focus on Sessions, the press, even as they reported that it was an attempt to deflect the media cycle, they immediately shifted with it. So this is all extremely interesting. It's certainly a cunning and it is potentially very politically explosive. It is a Watergate level and very similar accusations, if true, because this involves the use of U.S. intelligence to spy on political opponents, whether they believe there was a valid reason or not. And if I don't often defend the Obama administration, but it is conceivable that they actually believed that there might have been connections between Russia and Trump that were improper. As far as we know, the ones that have happened, none of them were illegal or illicit in any way. The Democrats, the deep state, the media may not like them, but Trump ran and won the election on a foreign policy platform of detente with Russia. What he has done, what his people have done, despite the furor, the Neo-McCarthyite hysteria, is perfectly legitimate. in pursuit of that. But the fact is that the deep state, the media, the Democrats don't want that foreign policy shift. And they might very well have concluded that Trump would never, that no one, Trump or anyone, would want that foreign policy shift, being what they, how they view Russia and how they view the world through a liberal ideological rather than realist framework, that there must be some ulterior motive behind Trump, that he must be blackmailed by the Russians or paid by the Russians. We've all experienced this before, where particularly, not only, but a lot of liberals don't believe that anyone seriously believes anything different than they do, or if they do, that it's only because they're being paid or that they are brainwashed. So it is entirely possible that Obama and whichever judges in FISA might have approved this, and Comey at the FBI, they believe there might have been something there. But it seems, at least right now, that if they did believe that, and that's why they ordered it, that they didn't find anything. At least nothing enough to, you know, make open to the public that would have derailed his presidency, or I'm sure they would have released it by now. And to adding to all of this, and it is deeply connected with this, we know that in the 14 days before Obama left office, before Trump took office, that Obama vastly increased the power of the National Security Agency to spread shared information, intel attained like this among federal agencies. And I think there's the very credible possibility or motivation for doing this, first put forward, I believe, by the Moon of Alabama blog, picked up by the Duran, Alexander Mercurius, and others, that the reason they did this is deliberately to ensure that there were leaks from within the deep state, from within the federal bureaucracy, by pushing all of this information, most of it implications and insinuations, and very little of it of any credible accusations of that anything technically illegal or illicit was done. But we've certainly seen the results of that. The Trump administration, from the security services, the intelligence community, and the State Department is leaking like a colander. And they don't seem to have any power to stop that. And all of this accusations against Flynn and against Sessions have been led by anonymous current and former government officials reporting to the Washington Post or to the New York Times. And that's what's driving all of this. This is the deep state. And it is, I believe, has been spurred on by Obama increasing the power of the NSA to share intel among the rest of the government in such an easy and open access way like this.
You know, you start to see a strategic framework emerging out of this too, because the first casualty was Flynn. And, you know, there's been some speculation about why that might have been. I know one analyst who said actually that it might represent a change in thinking inside the Trump administration towards Iran. But really, Flynn was Trump's guy that had connections to the military command structure. He had deep connections inside the military, and he's removed. And now they're going after the attorney general while Trump is facing a blizzard of litigation. His administration's lawyer is defending himself would be defending the administration against these things. In other words, that's compromised. And if they could take him out, you now have no lawyer and no connection to the military. Are they setting the stage for taking him down, or these steps in that process?
Absolutely. This is very well thought out. I'll put a little bit different spin on what you've suggested, particularly with Flynn. I certainly don't believe that this represents a change of the Trump administration on Iran, because we still have Pompeo in there, we still have Mattis. Right. They are just as hawkish on Iran as was Flynn. So no, I don't believe it represented a change, and I don't believe that a war with Iran has been stopped because Flynn has been removed, whether it would be coming or not. I don't believe that in the slightest. Mm-hmm. Certainly, Flynn had a personality that conflicted with other people in the cabinet. Flynn didn't make friends easily. He certainly pissed off the Obama administration when he was their Obama's director of military intelligence, the DIA. And he obviously objected to Obama's policy of arming Islamist and jihadist rebels to overthrow the Syrian government via the CIA. But what I do believe is Flynn, because of his institutional background as head of the DIA, not only had insight into the military, but more importantly had insight into the intelligence community. And he had a lot of beefs with the CIA, and in particular the Director of National Intelligence. Under Obama, he had a lot of conflicts with them. And Flynn, even more than detente with Russia, even more possibly than war with Iran, what Flynn wanted was to reform the intelligence community. During the Obama years, the end of the Bush years and through the Obama years, the Director of National Intelligence was made a very powerful position that Flynn and many others within the intelligence community believe creates a politicized layer between the field reporters, the agents on the ground, the intel they collect, and the White House. And that through all the various agencies, this would be funneled into the Director of National Intelligence, and this would be fed to the White House with certain interpretations in certain ways. Flynn believed that was wrong, and he believed it led to the debacle in Syria, and possibly he believed that about Libya as well. He wanted to reform the intelligence structure, probably weaken or get rid of the Director of National Intelligence altogether. He wanted to purge the system, as it were, of this deep state interest that would have been disloyal and leaking on Trump. So by removing him, that prevents anything of that of happening. His replacement, McMasters, is a Mattis loyalist. Mattis is the babysitter of Trump. He's liked by both parties. McMasters has already reversed what changes Flynn wanted to make to the National Security Council, some of them at least, and there's no indication that he intends to go forward with Flynn's proposed reforms of the intelligence community structure, chain of command, and the DNI. Mm-hmm. So that is them saving themselves from being purged and reformed. And then we go to the Attorney General. You're right. Once any investigation is launched without oversight by the Attorney General, with him recusing himself, this could very quickly evolve into the witch hunt that Democrats hope will be enough to eventually impeach the Trump administration, or at the very least completely sabotage and scorched earth any foreign policy attempts at detente with Russia. That may already have been done.
Okay. And, you know, if you're looking at, like, trying to parse all of this stuff, Trump had noted, you know, positions that were contrary to the conventional wisdom with respect to NATO, with respect to Syria, since with respect to relations with Russia, with respect to Ukraine. In all of these areas, and in Yemen, by the way, we're actually seeing U.S. Airstrikes against al-Qaeda, quite a difference from the former policy of providing air cover for them. Looking at, like, doing tea leaf reading across, we had meetings on NATO, we have the situation has changed in Syria on the ground substantially, what's happened in Yemen and what is happening in Ukraine. You want to kind of walk that landscape and give us some insight?
Sure. First with the NATO, of course, the administration made a full court press, both at a NATO foreign minister level meeting, or defense minister level meeting, sorry, that Mattis attended, and then almost immediately after the Munich Security Conference, where in the end, the Secretary of Defense Mattis, the Vice President Pence, and even a little show by Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, all went to reassure the European allies of Trump's commitment to NATO, something that, of course, is unusual that they even had to reassure them of it, but also to press Trump's arguments that the rest of the NATO members need to live up to their 2% of GDP spending commitments, which only either four or two of them are currently making, all of the European members of NATO. Possibly it's only Poland and Estonia meeting them. And also that the greater focus should be on counterterrorism, in particular going after ISIS, but counterterrorism in general, something that NATO really doesn't pay a lot of serious attention to, it must be said. And they have actually contributed very little to the fight against ISIS other than some AWACS flights. NATO as an organization hasn't done anything else. And in both of those, it seems he was essentially rebuffed. The European leaders, Merkel in particular, but others, basically, we're not going to pay anymore. We also give development aid, or we take care of immigrants, and that's also a contribution to security, at which even the Secretary General had to raise his eye and says, wait a minute, that doesn't count. But Trump was rebuffed. The Europeans are not going to spend any more, despite screaming about a Russian threat. They're not willing to pay any more than 1 or 1.2% of their economies to defend from Russia. They would simply want the United States to spend and do it. And they're not going to focus anymore on counterterrorism. They see themselves far more as a agency enforcing U.S. global hegemony than anything else. And terrorism just isn't an existential threat. To states. They don't see it that way. Mm. In fact, it can actually be an excuse for them to go into countries around the world.
Right.
So then we go on to Ukraine, where the change we have seen is Poroshenko continually get a cold shoulder. They've continually pushed for meetings with Trump. They haven't gotten it. The Ukrainians, the Poroshenko regime, the Putsch regime there, was very outspoken during the campaign against Trump in support of Clinton, and may have actually created some of this dodgy dossier and fake information that was fed, making accusations, some of them quite salacious and unbelievable, right, about Trump. They may have actually had a hand in that. So Trump is already not well disposed towards them. But Congress, actually, in the last week, has put forward bills that are expected to pass that would cut military funding to Ukraine from the U.S. government by more than half, from 350 to 150 million, which would be seen as very significant from Russia. In Syria, we have interesting developments. The administration's policy, we've got people speaking out over the place. No one really knows where the administration is going to fall down in the end. Probably not even the administration itself. They're probably still arguing about it amongst themselves. This latest round of Geneva talks went nowhere. Not that any have before, but more importantly this time, because no one knows what the U.S.'s long-term position is. At the same time, there are reports from Reuters and others that the Syrian Islamist rebels, the FSA and others, have stopped being funded and armed and trained by the CIA. That has come to an end. And there is no clear indication whether this is only temporary or permanent. Now, the Saudis and Qataris and Turks will still be funding them, and possibly the UK and others. But as of this moment, as we know, the CIA is not arming the FSA or other Islamist rebels in Syria, including those, all of them allied with al-Qaeda. At the same time, military aid from the Pentagon is being increased to the SDF, the U.S.-backed Kurds, branded as the Social Democratic Forces, including supposedly heavier equipment that they would need to take Raqqa. Now, the U.S. has made noises, Trump has made noises about no-fly zones, about troops, more troops on the ground in eastern Syria.
Safe areas.
To take Raqqa. Yeah, but none of that is clear. And at the same time, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Dunford, came right out and said, we have no intention, told his counterpart in Russia, defense minister, Shoigu, that he had no intention of putting more troops on the ground. So none of that is clear. And I believe that if the U.S. does any of this thing, it will be to support the Kurds, but not the FSA under Trump. But that's just a prediction at this point.
But you also have some new facts on the ground in Syria that the U.S. appears to be acquiescing to.
Absolutely. And this is around this race, this war of maneuver that is going on between Turkey and their proxy FSA, Ahrar al-Sham, and other rebels, with the Turks' invasion of north central Syria above Aleppo, the area they are trying to expand it out, in particular to the east, perhaps also to the west. But Erdogan hopes to create his own little proxy state ruled by you know, his Islamist proxies in Syria, the FSA and others. And he does this under the idea that he's fighting ISIS and the terrorist Kurds in this Operation Euphrates Shield, which is an open, aggressive and illegal invasion and occupation of Syrian territory, besides, you know, all of the terrorism that he is supporting there with these proxies. He is trying to expand out to the east. He has made statements that he believes that both Manbij, a city formerly held by ISIS, then seized by, taken after a long, hard struggle by U.S.-backed Kurds, the SDF, should, and Raqqa also, which is still the capital of ISIS, as it were, should be held by Arabs. And of course, he means his pet Arabs in Syria, not the Syrian government.
Right.
So he has been trying to expand. He's managed to take al-Bab. He may have come to another deal with ISIS that evacuated the area. But he wants Manbij, and he would need Manbij to move further towards Raqqa. But the Syrian army and the Russian actual ground forces, a small number of ground forces, cut a deal with the U.S.-backed Kurds to take over area at least around Manbij, possibly Manbij itself, in effect containing Turkish advances, who presumably would not be as willing for open conflict with the Syrian army and Russia, although there have been there have been clashes all along that contact line. And if the U.S.-backed Kurds agreed to this, it would seem that the Trump administration has agreed to it. They, their only response to this happening was that U.S. operations would not be affected by this transfer of territory by the Kurds they back to the Syrian government. You know, the Russians supporting them. And I simply cannot see that having happened under the Obama administration, and certainly not under a Clinton administration. So there's this war for maneuver, and the way that the supporters of regime change in Syria and Western think tanks and media are calling this right now, they see that Turkey and the FSA are now being confronted by a joint alliance of the Kurds, the Syrian government, Russia, and the United States, as well as Iran and Hezbollah, etc. This would be a quite remarkable turnaround, even if it's only half true.
And you got about 30 seconds. What about Yemen?
Yemen, not quite as clear, but it seems that Trump is much more focused on making strikes against al-Qaeda. In fact, al-Qaeda, that might be, is almost certainly supported by Saudi Arabia in Yemen. And Trump has made repeated strikes and one special forces operation, much publicized about, against al-Qaeda forces in Yemen that have at least been tacitly on the same side of, as it were, of the Saudi invasion and occupation of Yemen to try to put their puppet back in control of that country.
Mark, thank you very much. A pleasure as always.
Don, thanks for having me.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.